Thanks so much for listening. Before I get into the episode, I wanted to thank today's podcast sponsor, which is Coda Luna and their baby keepsake castle. I personally just put all of my baby's memorabilia into these little keepsake castle boxes, and they are so adorable, functional, and if you really love organization, then you're really going to love this keepsake box. So not only is it a keepsake box, but it also includes a baby book, and it has space for capturing all of the milestones of your baby's early years. And then the keepsake box itself stores all of the memorabilia that you want to keep. So baby's first socks and pacifier and the little hat that they wore when they came home from the hospital. So this keepsake castle with the baby memory book is more than just an organizational product. It's a gateway to preserving the remarkable journey of new parenthood. So take a moment to visit keepsakecastle.com today and embark on creating a lasting legacy of love and nostalgia. Hi, Debbie. How are you?
Hi, Amanda. I'm very well today.
Good. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me, and I'm excited about the topic that we have in store. But before we get into it, will you please tell folks a little bit about you and where you're from and how you got into the very special and unique work that you do?
Okay. Anyone asks me, if they ask me how I got into it, that goes to a story. It's like the same story, but it's my story. And it literally came to me in a dream. I had a dream, and it was not the MLK kind of dream. It was the at night you wake up and you go, wow, that was profound. And it was while I was traveling away from the small town in California that I was living at. And it was about a friend there who literally did owe me a little bit of money. And in my dream, she looked at me so excited and said, Debbie, you know that money I owed you? I invested it and you're rich. So when I got home, a month later, that was the first thing I did was go find Diane and say, I had a dream about you. What could this have been about? And, you know, the way the universe works is so strange because, of course, I had the dream about a month before. But as I drove to her home up a mountain, she wasn't there. I was coming back down the mountain, met her in the middle. She was coming back from the first workshop that this guy ever gave. So it was precognitive. My guides knew what they were doing, giving me the dream, knowing what would happen when I got home, that Diane would just be coming back from this very first alchemical hypnotherapy workshop that had ever existed. So that's how my journey began. She took literally the money she owed me and bought me my first session and paid me back.
That's a pretty cool story. Thanks for sharing that. I love it when there's this always, you know, a story tied to a simple question is as simple as like, how did you get into it? Could you also just introduce yourself, where you live, and what it is that you do exactly?
Yes, I did spend 12 years in California after growing up in mostly New York. Never thought I would come back to the East Coast. People don't leave California, but I ended up in Atlanta in 1988 and have not left. So it kind of amazes me that I made my home in the Southeast. And it just doesn't seem to be any good reason to leave. But one reason I came was because alchemical hypnotherapy, which I'll mostly call alchemy, was pretty glutted in California. Like I said, it began when I had my first session in 1983. That was its inception. So I was there from the beginning, and I got the feeling I needed to bring it east. So I opened up Atlanta, started something I call the Alchemical Hypnotherapy Association of Atlanta, which is AHA. And since then, I've trained many alchemists in Atlanta, as well as going back to California, Colorado, other places like New Zealand. And pretty recently, I've kind of stopped my school of training people, but I'm continuing to do private sessions. I love working with couples. That's my favorite. But since then, I've also written a book called Talking to Myselves, Learning to Love the Voices in Your Head. And I invented a couple of games, transformational games. One of them, my own, that's based on alchemy, is called Clarity, the Game of Your Life.
I played it.
As its nickname. Yeah, you just recently played it. It is like amazing. And I kind of called it Alchemy in a Box when I invented it. Like, how can we help people to process who don't want to lie down, go into a two-hour session in their subconscious mind, who just want to play through their issues? Because play is a good time to get to how you really play life. Because you're so undistracted by your logical mind. You're just playing. And it ends up showing you about yourself. And then someone named Colin Tipping, you may know, some people might know, he created Radical Forgiveness, the Radical Forgiveness Institute, and he recently passed away. He is from Atlanta via England. And I invented a game for them, for the Institute, called Satori, the Game of Radical Forgiveness. So if anyone knows that game, that was me also.
Oh, what an interesting career you have, and what an interesting modality, alchemical hypnotherapy. Can you explain what it is exactly?
Well, the ancient alchemists are known to turn lead into gold. That may have been a party trick that they really did, but the true alchemists were working on what they called the great work, which was inner transformation. Carl Jung would be the modern alchemist in our world. And he works a lot with archetypes, inner archetypes. And that's a huge part of what we do. He coined the term synchronicity. So I hope it's a ubiquitous term that everybody understands. But what my goal is with that transformation from our base emotions into the gold of self-knowledge and transformation is to be able to get into the flow. How do you know if you're in the flow? Look for synchronicities. That's a key. That's a clue I want to give people, because that will show you. And so what are synchronicities? Things like, and I find these happening to myself more and more and quicker together. I think the quicker they are, like when you say something out of your mouth and then you hear it on the radio or the TV, like the second it's coming out of your mouth and then someone else is saying it. Mm-hmm. And it's not just a regular word like with or the, some strange off the wall word or phrase, and you say it and then it's repeated by the universe. That's a clue. The universe is telling you that you're on something. You're in the flow. You're on track. You're not knocking your head against the wall going, what is going on? Why isn't anything opening for me? Follow the clues and, walk down the yellow brick road.
So like a sign. Some people would call it like a sign. I see signs from the universe.
Yes. Yes. Take those signs. Yeah. So, I like life as play. Why don't we play with life? So that's why I invent games too.
I like that. That's a great explanation. Thank you. Thanks for the tie as well between like the stereotypical thought that comes to mind when you hear the word alchemy of like the, turning things into gold. I didn't connect that. I didn't know. Okay. So I'm so glad that we have defined what it is, where it came from, your background. And can we talk more about alchemical hypnotherapy as a healing modality? And of course, the show is focused on birth, postpartum, and parent mental health. And so for today's episode, I really want to tie this back to preparing for having a baby. And things you can do to prepare for having a baby, whether it's your first or your fifth, a great thing that I recommend for all parents is to work on your stuff. Work on your stuff. Do some inner work, do some healing work, because that inevitably comes up in your worst moments when you are tired, when you are just at your worst, when your hormones are rushing, which often happens after you have a baby and can happen prenatally as well. So of course, you know, you want to be gentle with yourself, but with the lens of looking at the importance of healing prenatally to set oneself and family up for success, can you talk about alchemical hypnotherapy as a healing modality?
Sure. And when you say prenatally, I wish we would also talk about prenuptially. Mm-hmm. Because it takes two to make a baby, yeah. And baby makes three. And there can be all sorts of stuff going on with our own mother issues, you know, with our mother as women, with our fathers who, I mean, how many people say I married my father, right? Wouldn't it be better if you could process the stuff you had with your father? In fact, so I know I'm regressing, but I'm trying to heal the world, you know, one person at a time. And if I can get this out, maybe more people will think before they even get married and get to the baby making stage, because it's not going to get easier once you have that addition to your world than it will just between you and your husband, and things will change. And if, let's say, if you married your father and you had stuff with your father, let's talk about the law of attraction. Why does the universe even couple you? What is the good of relationships in life? It's to heal. People come to you as healing angels. They are there to be mirrors so that you can have the stuff you need to work on. And the universe goes, hey, this person's going to help you work on your stuff. And if this person is just like daddy and you haven't healed your issues with daddy, guess what your relationship is going to be like? You're working through daddy issues with your husband to begin with. So what if we could start off by doing our daddy issues so that now the law of attraction is saying, wow, I've processed through my father's stuff and I found, which we can in alchemy, I found a new father, a really loving father. I have found that, yes, although parents always do the best they can, and we are wired to love them and forgive them no matter what, it wasn't always the best for us. In other words, for our inner child. And so it's really easy for us as adults to go, yeah, they did the best they could. I've forgiven them. That doesn't help. That child who is stuck down there, still remembering being slapped across the face, thrown out of a car, locked in a trunk while your mother has sex with another man. I mean, I've had everything come up. And yeah, wow. So we need to deal with that, you know, the mother stuff, because we can become our mothers. How often do we hear those words come right out of our mouth? And we, if we can process our father stuff first and find a loving father, then the law of attraction is going to give us the new vision that we have for a man in our life, because we've already healed the stuff that the universe would have brought our way. And then we'll go, oh, I found a man to marry me. He's put a ring on my finger. We're going down the aisle. And they're not thinking about anything else. And then all that stuff comes up. So that's the prenuptial stuff is where I wish we could begin. So let's say, okay, you haven't done that, because no one does. Yeah. They all marry their fathers. You know, we marry our mothers and our fathers. That's the way it is, because nobody does that. So first of all, I'm trying to prevent that. Then there we are. And we're in love, hopefully. You know, what I say about heterosexual sex is that babies happen. They're not always planned.
Sure.
You know, they happen, not always at the most opportune moments, but they will change your life when they do. Hopefully it's a very happy occasion.
Yeah.
And everybody looks forward to it. But then what starts happening? Hormones, all the things that you used to do to be fun and free. And, you know, where did you meet your mate? Was it at a bar? Were you drinking? Did you like to go out drinking with them? All of a sudden you're pregnant. You can't drink anymore. So all of a sudden the husband can still, the wife can't. So she might not be that fun wife or girlfriend or fiance that she once was. She's suddenly feeling everything in her ready to nest and create a child. All these hormones, all these things are happening. And so the match isn't always now the same page.
I have a question to go back to kind of the basics. So I want to rewind if you're open
okay.
to this. Let's go back to what you had said about giving the example of, like, you know, like you go into your marriage basically bringing in your stuff that you haven't healed, your unresolved, whatever it is. It could be trauma, it could be an issue, it could be a dad issue, it could be a whatever issue. You bring it into your relationship if it's unresolved, and it's going to show up one way or another. And so, you know, your goal is to heal it. One way you can do that is through alchemical hypnotherapy. And you had mentioned the term or the phrase new father, like you're going to have a new father. Can you kind of slow it down and go back to basics of alchemy for us about what exactly do you mean by this?
So we have the chance to redo how we were parented. So what alchemy is really trying to do is connect the emotions of our child, because the child, our inner child, should be a source of creativity, happiness, joy, imagination, play, all of these things that sometimes we grow up and we forget.
And we all have an inner child, right?
We all do have an inner child, but a lot of people, including me, I wasn't in touch with that anymore. And I wasn't even in touch with kids. I say in my book, I thought they were another species. I didn't even know how to relate to a child, never mind my inner child.
Yeah.
And yet my own process was stomach aches, you know, massive stomach aches that had me in Mass General Hospital for tests for 3 days in sixth grade. And that was because my father had some, you know, expectations of me, judgments, short-tempered, and I took it all into my stomach. So how many other people are already dealing with all of that? And yet I worshiped my father. I thought he was the bomb because he's a comedian, everybody loves him, but at home he could let his hair down. So I had to find out that this wasn't the ideal father. There were so many things about him that were great, but it wasn't all great. So we can find that ideal father from those archetypes that Carl Jung talks about that exist in the universe. The way I actually believe is that I believe that our soul is genderless, and that we have a part of us, like women would have a male side that's been watching over us our whole lives, from the time that we split as a zygote, or, you know, and decided to become one gender. The other gender is still up there. And this is Carl Jung's idea of the collective unconscious, that it's all up there. So not only does it become a father, an ideal father, an inner father, but it can also be an ideal mate, an inner mate, that contrasexual person inside of us, not that we're making up. Yeah, I had Patrick Swayze posters on my wall as a kid, and that might have been my ideal. And I have to say that my boyfriend now does look a little bit like Patrick Swayze in face and body. So I think I chose well. But, you know, we don't always get that ideal. You know, our partner can't always live up to it. Our dad can't always live up to it. But inside, we can have that person who tells us they love us unconditionally. They have appropriate boundaries, anger issues, lack of anger issues, love, loving arms, guidance, advice. They're someone to go to from the spiritual realm. And that's the goal of alchemy, is to heal the emotional dross, the mixed up emotions, to bring back that healed inner child from all the confusion that she or he has had growing up, and to connect with spirit so we have both within us. We can be the adult walking around in the world with access to our emotions and inner child and to spirit as inner archetypes, an inner father, inner mother, inner mate, inner guides. Past lives can even come back to us. So that's the goal of alchemy, really, to be connected with spirit and emotionally healed. That's the secret, anyway.
That's really powerful. And thank you for that explanation. And so the next word that I'm realizing that it can be a little intimidating. I mean, for me, like before I talked to you the first time and I heard about this, I was a little intimidated. I was like, alchemical hypnotherapy. That sounds, that's a lot. That's a mouthful. So the next word that I would love for you to give a little bit of background on is hypnotherapy. That is something that is also, I think, stereotyped oftentimes about like making people think they're chickens. And doing goofy things like that, like hypnotizing someone. Stage hypnosis is what a lot of people think of. I have a different take on it. The first time I had a different take on it was when I found out about hypnobirthing or hypnobabies, using hypnosis, the power of hypnosis, to cope with pain during childbirth. And then now I've been exposed to alchemical hypnotherapy as a healing modality. So can you talk about what hypnotherapy is exactly and how it works?
Yeah, and you brought up hypnobirthing and hypnobabies, and I actually was thinking of that. That is what most pregnant women, first time pregnant, they know those, yeah, both of those schools or whatever they are, those, you know, and they often say, yeah, I'm all prepared for childbirth because I've gone through hypnobabies or hypnobirthing. And what they have done, and you can correct me if I'm saying it wrong, is they've gone into a class and heard all the suggestions about it not being pain. It's going to just feel like pressure. And you can, you know that you can get through it. It's only going to take a few seconds, and you can have this safe word or this place that you go in a garden or somewhere that you can take yourself. And everyone feels like, okay, I'm ready. I've done it. And that is another cause, other than stage hypnosis, which, yeah, that's all a mystery to me. I've watched a stage show and laughed my butt off, you know, at people, yeah, I knew getting on stage and doing these things. I don't know how to do that. That's a kind of trick they use by using very suggestible people. I'll tell you the trick. First of all, they ask for volunteers. So you got the extroverts that are volunteering, the ones that say, I want to make a fool of myself. And then they get you up on stage and they do a few things, you know, to see if you're really suggestible. Then, yeah, they tell some to go down. So you only have the very highly suggestible people left on stage out of a huge audience. That is not what hypnosis is all about. It's not fake, because it is real for just a very small percentage of the population. Then there are suggestions. Okay. Now, that's what a lot of people think of as hypnotherapy or hypnosis, is you're going to take suggestions. You know, Stuart Smalley, right? I am good enough. I am smart enough. And God darn it, people like me.
Yeah. Or like, you know, affirmations.
Affirmations, belief systems. Yeah, giving suggestions that you are thin and you love your body and you now only eat things that are good for you. Okay, the thing about that is we don't buy it. And that's where these other archetypes, these sub-personalities that my book is about, like our inner rebel or our inner cynic going, oh yeah, right, I have a bridge I can sell you. You know, we just don't buy it that I look in the mirror and I see myself as thin. Yeah, right. You know, I'm only attracted to, you know. So that's where when people think they can just get these suggestions, I see it like the difference between mowing a lawn and pulling things out by the roots, right? The weeds are going to grow again, and I'm not talking about weed killer. I don't like that. I'm talking about pulling things out by the roots. There's a new term called functional medicine, where we go back to the root of issues. And that's what we do in alchemy. So instead of somebody saying that now I'm thin, you know, we might go back to a time that they felt like they weren't good enough because of their weight. Let's go back to a time. So this is a very interactive process. I spend the beginning of the session finding that key of what is the key that this person really needs right now to get to the bottom of, to get to the root of. And when I've got it, then it's amazing how often I think, oh, we've talked all about it. We're going to go to that time when your sister put a pillow over your head and she, you know, and you couldn't breathe. But no, that's not what we go back to. We go back to maybe, you know, something completely different, maybe as an infant and some, you know, coughing spell or, you know, something completely unrelated, whether it had been thought of a million times or never remembered, completely stuck in the subconscious mind. And that's the thing, is finding what's stuck, but not just finding it, because in alchemy, we heal it. We do a process called running and changing incidents. So we go back to a time when something happened and then we make it different. And what I have to say about that is I've been doing it, like I said, since 1983, when they used to think that brain cells died. Since then, we now have neuroplasticity. Oh, brain cells don't die. You see, in 1983, we were already talking about it in alchemy. But I have a nice encyclopedia from 1987 that still says brain cells die. That's it. Once they're dead, they're dead. But now, wow, what did scientists find since the 2010s? Oh, they're plastic. Yeah. And now all the therapists in the world are going, oh my God, all the things we've been doing with just trying to talk about issues, that prefrontal cortex where we talk and think and sit and look in each other's eyes is not the place where change is created. It's created a whole different part of the brain, what we would call the subconscious mind. It's also called the limbic system. And we talk about the amygdala, the hippocampus. That's where I work with alchemy. That's where we go. We go right to those places. And just like a computer programmer, that's where we can change things.
So then rather than just making mere suggestions or like affirmations to repeat back to yourself, which can be powerful in and of themselves, we know that the mind, just thinking a thought, is powerful, but alchemy in the work that you do takes it past the conscious level of consciously thinking the thought of, I'm going to repeat to myself, you know, people like me and I'm smart and I'm kind, you know, the Stuart Smalley thing, instead of simply repeating those things, which can be helpful and powerful in and of itself, you're going deeper. You're going to the subconscious level. And what exactly are you doing when you go a level deeper? You said that you find that key, like that, what that, you know, kind of what the root of that yeah. issue was, right? And then what right. are you doing?
So you go to the incident of okay. what happened.
What started the root? There's like always, right. is there always an incident? There's always an event?
Because we totally trust the subconscious mind to find it. And once I've done my work, you know, in my brain of going, okay, this is the key. This is it. This is where we have to go. And so I'm at least directing the subconscious mind where to go. Then we completely trust it to bring it up. And that's the hard work. That's the place where most, and we'll differentiate again between hypnotherapists, most hypnotherapists are taught, don't go into the emotions, because they don't know what to do once you're there. They have no idea.
I'm a layman. I'm thinking in terms of like that stereotype of taking a watch, like a string watch, and like dangling it in front of someone's eyes and, you know, watch my pendant as I
swear. Yeah.
I'm thinking that. That's what I saw in cartoons as I grew up as a kid, when I'm thinking of like, I'm being hypnotized. So when you're hypnotizing someone, A, do you call it hypnotizing someone? And B, how do you actually go into it?
That's a nice way of putting it, because I've been a speaker at a lot of hypnosis conferences, and I find out it's not a match. I am not a traditional hypnotherapist. They don't like me. They don't like to listen to what I have to say, because they want more tools, tools, tools. What do we do when we're in the subconscious? How do we make sure they're suggestible? How do we do it faster and better? And I'm like, no, we're doing therapy in the subconscious mind. And so hypnosis is a means to an end. We've got to go, like I said, people are thinking the cerebral cortex is where we think, and that's where we stay. We've got to get someone out of there. Hypnosis is the key to getting them out of their thinking brain. So we have to use hypnosis. But in my 2-hour session, if somebody's having a full session, that's the first 5 or 10 minutes. Then it's done. So I can do, I'm not doing look at the watch, but I'm using my voice to say, oh, take a deep breath. Imagine you're at a beach. And I'm lulling them into, you know, out of their thinking mind and into their subconscious mind. And then when we get there, and because I found the key of where we're going, like Stuart Smalley, I'm good enough, you know, and people like me, I'd say, let's go back to a time when people did not like you. And then, bam, they're back at middle school being bullied. And then we're in an incident. And all we need to process is either an incident where the inner child is, find out how old they are, who they're with, what's happening, or we need a person, and it's the bully. The bully is right in front of them, taunting them. And then we can communicate and finish the communication that we were too chicken. I mean, who at 14 is going to be able to say something to a bully? You can't. You're intimidated. You're stuck. And so that stuckness is left inside us. That inner child who was bullied is still crying and writing in her journal and hugging her doggy, that's me, at home when, you know, she should be with friends, but she doesn't have any because she's being bullied at school. And then we go back, and like what happened with me is I went back to an incident where I saw myself leaving my childhood home. So, you know, literally the scene was saying goodbye, driving away from Massachusetts to New York and leaving my best friend, who I knew would love me unconditionally. And then I was like, but I'll never be loved again like that. No one can ever love me again like that. And I had locked my heart up. I saw it as a treasure chest with chains around it. And there's my stomach ache. So I took everything into my stomach. I took the pain, but I locked myself up, and I could even take the pain, you know, and just got stoic and happy, fine, but not, I wasn't able to really access all of my emotions, because I was always trying to please others, be the good girl, not get in trouble, have friends, but never quite feeling loved. And so by going back there and being able to change that incident, find a guide who told me, but I'm with you. Every time you miss her, can you feel me holding your hand and know that I'm with you and I love you? And that changed my life. And that was what, you know, Diane bought me way back in 1983, that session.
Wow. Well, and I'll say that my take on what the experience is like, because I have done sessions. I've done sessions with Debbie, full disclosure. They were fantastic. It reminded me of the inner child work that I did. It reminded me of, if anybody's ever seen the movie Drop Dead Fred, it's an old movie, Phoebe Cates. I want to say it's from the early 90s. It may even be from the late 80s, but I think it's from the early 90s. And Phoebe Cates, a really bizarre movie. She is in her 20s, and she is either married to or engaged to some kind of Joe Schmo guy. And he's messing around on her, and she's having like a personal life crisis. And she starts seeing her imaginary friend again. Drop Dead Fred is his name. And the movie flashes back to like when she was a child, and she was an only child, and she would get in trouble all the time. And she was like, really like, you know, mischievous. And you would see her imagining seeing Drop Dead Fred and getting into mischief with Fred. And then it fast forwards to her adult life, and she is now seeing Fred again when she's having this personal crisis in her life. And at the end of the movie, not to give a huge spoiler about this movie, but she goes into this dream state where she goes into this dream state in her head with Fred, where she goes back to her childhood home, and she like slays the dragon, which is basically her mom. And she makes it way up to her childhood bedroom, and her as a child, the actress, like, you know, in every movie you've got the character, and there's an actor that plays them as a child, and there's an actor that plays them as an adult, right? Both are in this scene, and Phoebe Cates, the adult, rescues and like unshackles
That's
the
it.
Child. Yes. And like there's this moment, and they hug, and then I'm like, I get emotional, like even just thinking about it, like right now. And that's what alchemical hypnotherapy made me think of when I was done with my session.
Perfect.
I was like, oh my gosh, I'm just like Phoebe Cates. I went back and I slayed my own dragon. I rescued myself as a child. Like that's how it felt.
That's a great example. Oh my God. I felt Ally McBeal from the 80s again, right? Or 90s, whatever it was. They had great depictions of that child that was always there, ever present, and they'd go back and forth. Yeah, there are some good depictions of it, and that's great. Disney's The Kid is also one, if anyone remembers that. But anyway.
I did see that, the one with Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
I should watch that again. Okay, so to wrap this all up and to bring it back to, of course,
pregnancy.
People who are expecting. Yes. And of course, it's good to heal your wounds, your unresolved, you know, stuff, whether it's trauma or stuff or whatever you want to call it. It's good to heal that before you have a baby, because that stuff is just going to come up in parenting, of course. But also, I'm curious, because you have worked with expecting individuals before, and like, what's your take on doing this type of healing work with someone who is expecting a baby?
Well, one of the most heartwarming things for me is always the communication that one can have with the baby inside. So you're already singing to them, talking to the belly, but you can literally start seeing them in your mind and having these conversations, and they can tell you things, maybe why they're here, or at least you can begin to love them and talk to them in a different way, maybe make promises. I mean, I actually am working with one person now who I knew, I was working with her while the baby was in her belly, and now, because sometimes she has to, she brings the baby with her, and I swear the baby knows me. She knows my voice.
Probably.
She knows me. We're bonded, and you know, so that's one of the really beautiful ways to work with it. But also, like you say, when the kid, you know, grows up and stuff comes up, I want everybody to know, because I see it all the time, that if you don't heal your 3-year-old childhood stuff, when your kid hits 3, it will come up. So that's another, you know, and then when they hit 7, and all of a sudden it starts coming to you, oh, this is what happened to me when I was that age. And I can't, every time I look at him or her, you know, I'm yelling and it's, I'm remembering myself when I was that age. And so that's a really good reason to do it Also, to let go of shame and perfectionism and all the things that are going to happen when your body changes, and how the birth plan is probably not going to come off perfectly. And if you have a real big perfectionist, it can be hard. You can beat yourself up for how the birth was. And I actually see more people after their first birth because of the trauma in the hospital and finding out. And now, you know, I'm going to say something I hope doesn't hurt anyone, but you know, people who have gone through hypnobabies, hypnobirthing, and had these expectations of this perfect, it's only going to feel like pressure. And then they go, what? I can't yell too much in the microphone. That was the worst pain. I wanted to put a gun to my head. Now they lied. You know, it just wasn't what you thought from those suggestions. And yes, they, you know, suggestions can be great. Affirmations can be great. But we have so many parts of us that either aren't buying it, disagree with that opinion, and they're going to get more and more active inside of you. And you could find yourself sabotaging yourself from that part that you're not listening to as you're doing a bypass and just trying to put these affirmations on top of what you're really feeling. And then, oh my God, how many women then, this is what your whole podcast is basically about, it takes a village. You're all alone. All of a sudden you're alone. And there's these, you know, these babies making you feel like you're not good enough.
Yeah.
You're not a good mother. You're not doing it right. You're judging yourself and comparing yourself to other people. So see if you can get to those judgments and perfectionism and codependency. And that's a whole other thing. That's like my major thing that I teach is how not to feel like, you know, you have to be that rescuer. I was saying I had to be the good girl, and, you know, it turns you into the victim, and then you get mad that it wasn't working. Then you try it again and it becomes a cycle. And I help people learn how to break that cycle, to cut to the chase. It's by loving that little child, by rescuing her and realizing that's the one you need to heal. And then you need those boundaries that you have to set on your own rescuer and other people. That's the 1 minute version of what usually takes me 45 to go through. But that's, you know, you can hear it in a minute and it can take you a long time to get it. But once you do, you are different. And so I don't see codependency as a 12-step issue or an addiction at all. I see it as subpersonalities gone awry. And they can be trained, they can be, you know, you can be taught. That's where your conscious mind can also come into play, because you can learn it and grok it and know how to get out of that. And once you have one baby, you've got a triangulating situation. Mommy, daddy, baby can triangulate just like the rescuer, victim, persecutor. It's a triangle. And I can watch when people get on the different positions, and it can really get bad. And I help people with that too.
I really think that a lot of people are going to find this episode really interesting and helpful. And if anybody listening is interested in getting in touch with you or potentially working with you, how can they get in touch with you?
I am old school. I like my home phone. I work out of my apartment. It's very comfortable for me. I also work on screens, so there's no problem. Distance is not an issue, although I prefer, you know, if you're in the Atlanta area, I have people come as far away from Nashville. I have a weekly client who drives here from Nashville, so I'm worth it. But my phone number is 770-434-7488. Don't try texting it. And I have a website. You can just get to it by my name, www.debbieunterman.com, or the name of my book, talkingtomyselves.com. It's on Amazon, Talking to Myselves, Learning to Love the Voices in Your Head. You can find that on Amazon. You can come play Clarity on the New Moon if you're around. And remember, I love working with couples, because there are so many issues that are going to come up with parenting. What religion are we going to bring the kids up in? Are we going to go to private schools or public schools? I mean, so much.
Many.
Yeah, so there's a lot more I could have talked about, but I think we did a really nice job of covering it.
Yeah, well, thank you. And I totally agree. That's why, I mean, that's why I do the podcast, right? Because there's just like literally a myriad of topics related to parenting just in the first couple years alone. So,
and you do a fabulous job.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. And I really appreciate your insight. And thank you so much for just sharing it with us and taking the time to talk to me today.
You're so welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for listening to the show today. If you liked the episode and would like to hear more, please follow Finding Your Village wherever you listen to your podcasts. And don't forget to use the code FYVPODCAST to sign up for the postpartum class at pregnancytopreschool.net to save 15% today. Thank you so much, and stay safe, healthy, and connected.